Hey everybody, my name is Jesse Collings, and I want to tell you all about my show, the Gentlemen's Wrestling Podcast, here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. On the Gentlemen's Wrestling Podcast, we do a thorough analysis on the biggest issues and trends within the pro wrestling industry. We talk a lot about pro wrestling media, we talk a lot about fan culture and wrestling's place within general pop culture, and we talk about the broader influences that are shaping the way we discuss and analyze the pro wrestling industry. We've had some of the brightest minds in the pro wrestling intelligentsia on the show, including WrestleNomics host Brandon Thurston, both Rich Kreich and Joe Lanza from the Flagship Wrestling Podcast, Trevor Dame from the Through the Years podcast, and a whole lot more. This isn't a show for hot takes. It's not a show recapping the latest episode of television. This is a show focusing on the biggest topics in pro wrestling and doing a deep dive on the real stories behind the surface level analysis you might find elsewhere. The Gentlemen's Wrestling Podcast is available wherever you get your podcasts, and we'd really appreciate it if you gave us a try. Thanks.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Welcome back to another episode of The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. I am your host, Tyler Fornes, and with me as always is Fred. I'm just really good at my job. Sarcasm. Moreland, how are you, sir?
I'm doing all right. That was actually a reference to the report about Adam Page, which I guess we'll get into. I plan on doing like some non-wrestling stuff on this show, and then like, you know, because there's no Collision to talk about, so it's just really Dynamite. Because
oh, you don't want to talk about Mac McClung?
Look, we could talk about the dunk contest and how the scoring was pretty awful this year. I mean, if you want to, I watch the dunk contest every year because I love it. And even when it's not good, I enjoy it. And I thought this year's was pretty solid, but I do think that the judging was really wacky this year. I mean, nearly ruined it, you know, because Jaylen Brown should not have advanced to the finals.
What they need to do is they need to get people who are stars back in the dunk contest. They need to make the dunk contest good again. But the problem is you really can't be creative anymore because almost everything's been done.
I mean, Mac McClung did the double clutch, reverse dunk. And that was one of the most creative dunks I've ever seen. Just in terms of athleticism without going to props. We need to stop props is the real, you know, real solution.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, unless it's Shaq. Shaq's a fun prop.
Yeah, you can dunk. Like, people don't count as props. You can dunk.
I won't ever get sick of seeing a NBA player try to jump over a 7 foot tall man.
Exactly.
That rules.
It does rule. I will never look that. Like, people I do not count as props. Now, like, you know, the drone dunk from a couple years ago, or Blake Griffin jumping over vaguely the hood of a car and winning a contest he should not have won. I could do a whole like thing on the dunk contest. I could, like, you know, you give me a couple weeks when I'm not super busy and I could like give you full reviews on the entire history of the dunk contest.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I got takes.
Look, the dunk contest used to be good and now it's not. The last good dunk contest was Zach LaVine versus Aaron Gordon, and I will forever contend the right man won. Zach LaVine was better, but that's neither here nor there. Let's talk about some wrestling. And you alluded to it earlier about Hangman Page being good at his job. We have some different reporting here. And I think some of that has to just do with who the people are talking to and if they're being kayfabed or not. Because Hangman Page appeared to injure his ankle coming out of a muscle buster at the end of the six-man tag match on Dynamite on Wednesday night. And Dave Meltzer said that they feared it was a broken ankle. Well, according to Fightful, Dave was being worked, and they said that, hey, the quote was, Hangman's just really good at his job, and that he is just fine. It was a work. You could see something was a little off because Hangman was, like, yelling at somebody when the camera was on him, like, don't film me.
Yeah.
And that kind of says, hey, maybe it is a work. Maybe it's not real. Like, makes sense.
Yep. I could definitely see this being a work. But, you know, time will tell. We're recording this Thursday morning around 11 a.m. Eastern. So, you know, it's still early days. We should know by next week if it was a work or not. So my question to you is, if this is not a work, if that was an actual injury, and they do have to modify the pay-per-view main event to make it just Swerve versus Samoa Joe, what do you think the finish should be under those circumstances?
Samoa Joe wins, and then I'd have him drop the belt to Okada.
Okay.
That's what I would do. Interesting. Is that, I mean, we talked about the Okada thing last week. I think you bring him in and you strap him up. And you shoot him to the top because he is the biggest deal, and he's now in a huge company in America. This company does not need their world champion to appear every single week. And we've made fun of WWE for their champion not appearing, but it's not like he doesn't appear every single week. There is stretches where he doesn't appear for like 2 months. Yeah. And to me, that's a humongous difference. Jesse Collins wrote a fantastic piece for Voice of Wrestling earlier this week talking about how AEW doesn't necessarily need a big star. Like, they don't need, like, The Rock or Stone Cold. One of the appeals of AEW is guys kind of cycle in and out and have their stories and go away for a short amount of time. They don't get overexposed, and it keeps the product fresh and it keeps things engaging. And they have a lot of really good individuals on this roster. Well, you're going to get a big star, and it's okay if he doesn't appear on TV every single week. I'd strap up Okada. If we're going with the theory that the ankle's broken, what they should do if it stays a three-way, Hangman needs to screw over Swerve, pin him, and win the belt. I love the Samoa Joe title reign. I would love to see him hold it for like a year and a half. I just don't see how you have this as a three-way and don't have one of those two guys winning, because it just, it feels like it's a way to get the belt off of Samoa Joe while keeping him insanely strong.
I think it's a really interesting situation, because you could make the argument that, you know, Swerve should win because he has been on the come up for, you know, over a year now, and is clearly in a position where he'd really benefit from a title win. More so than I think Samoa Joe holding the belt longer. The counterpoint is that Samoa Joe has been a fantastic champion, and I don't think you want to cut that off too early either. I do think it's a really interesting situation, and like you said, with Okada and Ospreay coming in, that, you know, there's a couple options there that are intriguing as far as being world champions. But I also don't think that you need to necessarily put either immediately on the as the champs. So
can I throw a theory at you?
Yeah, sure. Go for it.
Okada wins the belt early and then drops it to Ospreay at All In.
You could. Yeah. I mean, that would obviously be a great finish for that crowd. And I think well received by pretty much everyone. I don't have a problem with that. I think that there's a lot of like correct solutions here. I don't think this is a case where like you have to do an obvious thing, you know, like Samoa Joe taking the belt off MJF when they did.
Yeah.
That was obvious that they needed to do that then for a multitude of reasons.
Let me throw this by you too, because we've been talking about this Hangman Page and Swerve Strickland thing for a long time, and they are trending towards a double turn. I don't think they performed the double turn.
I think they're already turned, but
kind of, but not really. Like, Swerve is getting, he's been getting massive reactions in buildings for a while, even when he's been a heel leaning guy. Like, the Swerve's House thing, it's incredibly over. And they've been leaning towards it. They haven't gone full force. And I feel like in this triple threat, sorry, three way, WWE verbiage, somebody come over and slap me in the face. I feel like this is the spot to complete the double turn. And that's why I mentioned screwing over Swerve, like a nut shot, and then you hit the buckshot or something like that. Or like a dead eye on a chair, something kind of dirty and slimy, to really push home the double turn. And then now you have Swerve chasing. Hangman finally gets the win over Swerve, which he hasn't been able to do. And you can kind of build off of that three-way. That number one contenders match where Swerve couldn't beat Hangman within the time limit. And now you have a couple reasons for him to really want to chase. And then you can continue to build with that. Like, to me, it feels like this is the spot for the double turn. But the fascinating thing is, which is why I'm really excited for Revolution in 10 days, they could do anything, almost anything, and it would be fascinating to watch, and it would be interesting, because there is no concrete solution here.
Yeah, there's a lot of different paths you can take, and I think this is a really interesting time in AEW's history, and it'll be kind of fascinating to see where things are in 3 or 6 months. I'm operating under the presumption that this ankle injury for Hangman is a work, so he will be in that pay-per-view main event. But I do think that changes the calculus if you were to miss that match as to what the finish would be. I think it's easier in a three-way for Joe to walk out the champ. You can have them kind of do something where he, costs, or there's some, like, Swerve and Hangman are too focused on one another, and then Spojo walks out the champ because of that. And I think that won't really affect either of them. I do think, I don't know if damaging is the right word, but I think it's more meaningful if Joe just beats Swerve straight up in a one-on-one, which is why they booked this way, I think.
Yeah. Regardless of how it turns out, we're going to be at the edge of our seats during that match of Revolution.
I'm very excited for it.
Samoa Joe in a high-profile main event against two phenomenal workers. It's just going to be an ass-kicking, and I can't wait. Let's go on to other news, though, because I think this is a very interesting piece. AEW has hired Jen Pepperman as VP of Content Development. If you've never heard the name, that's okay. But let's give you a little bit of background of why it's important. That she previously worked closely with Mercedes Moné in WWE. She also has a history of working in soap operas, including 3 Daytime Emmys for Best Directing. Look, AEW doesn't have a traditional writing staff like WWE does, but having somebody in the room who can help create and cultivate storylines, who has a background in creating and escalating drama, I think is a really good thing. I also think it's good that she previously worked with Moné in a very close capacity, and giving her a little bit of extra comfort as she's coming into the company is a net plus. TK did say in a statement that she's specifically going to help with storyline development, so that tracks with her background. It to me feels like an interesting hire. She did work with WWE, I believe 2017 until 2023 was her last year with the company. But having that background with like daytime soap operas, I think is a very, very interesting idea, because soap operas, some of them, All My Children, General Hospital, they've been on for 50 years, mm-hmm. and they keep finding new things to do with their characters, because these characters could sometimes be on TV for 20 or 30 years. It's not like a traditional like primetime show where like Grey's Anatomy, you've had characters cycle in and out over the last 20 years. No, characters don't last that long because you lose steam and figure out creative things to do with them. So by having somebody from that world come in and who's been able to find creative things to do with somebody who's been there a long time, I think is a really interesting asset to the overall creative product. Look, it could also suck, but the background, I think, is fascinating to me. And with how AEW isn't a WWE-style creative staff, I'm very intrigued.
Yeah, obviously, you know, I saw a discussion online yesterday that, if Moné can't just cut a good promo on her own, then she is not, you know, ever going to be good at cutting promos. I think that's overly simplistic. I do think that, I don't think she's a great promo by any stretch in general. I think it's much more of a star presence thing with her. But I think that, in the right situation, she could probably do okay. I think that if you've got a talent on your roster who's, valuable in every other way except for one, and you can find a way to, maximize their strengths and minimize the weakness, then you should do it. And if it involves hiring Mercedes' friend or coworker that she likes or whatever the proper term is, and using them to help her do better on talking segments, then I'm all for it. I think that's an obvious call.
Yeah, and sometimes it's good to bring somebody in just to get somebody, especially a big star, comfortable. All right, couple things here that we'll just kind of run through really quickly. Jim Ross is out of his rehab facility after surgeries on his hip. His hip was broken, but that was not revealed until this week. His contract did expire on Valentine's Day, but he said he's talking with TK about calling Sting's final match. Let me get your opinion on this, Fred, because I find this one really interesting. Should JR call Sting's final match? Should it be Tony Schiavone? Should it just be the two of them? Like, who should be calling Sting's final match? Because I'm going to be honest, a lot of the territory stuff as far as like who is calling what at specific times is a big blur to me. I know Schiavone called a lot of the Jim Crockett at stuff in WCW starting, what, like 89 or 90?
Earlier than that, I think.
Yeah. See, my timeline for that is kind of mush. Who should be calling Sting's final match if you want to go for that reverence angle?
I think that the proper move is to have them both call it, you know. Schiavone started with Jim Crockett in 83, and of course Ross was prior with Mid-South and UWF, and then he joined Jim Crockett in 87. So both of them were there for like the rise of Sting's career and everything. I think that, you know, they like to rotate people on the pay-per-views on the announce table, and I think this is a perfect opportunity to have the announce table be, you know, Schiavone, Ross, and let's say Excalibur, probably, since he's always the guy that's, you know, practically always at the table. I think that's probably your best three-man booth there for that circumstance and situation, as I try to say the two words at the same time. But, you know, they both have a fantastic connection to him, Ross and Schiavone. And I think that, Ross... You know, I've warmed up a little bit on him as his duties have decreased. I think that's been to his benefit as a performer, as an announcer. And I do think that between his connection to Sting and like his admiration for him and everything, and also the fact that he this will be him coming back from his health issues. And I'm glad that he is doing well after all of them. I think this is I think we'll get a very motivated Jim Ross. It won't be like when he was being forced to do Dynamite and pay-per-views, like the entire pay-per-views. And it was obviously either getting tired or just grumpy on the call and actively hurting the show, I think, at points. I've actually rather enjoyed how Ross was being used before he started having these health issues. And I think he'll slide right into here, and I think it'd be a perfect use for him. And I think Schiavone's just solid, you know. I get a little annoyed with him on Saturdays when he, like, botches move names, but that's always been a Schiavone weakness, and it's not that bad of a deal, you know.
Yeah. As long as the match is called well, I don't give a shit who calls it. So whatever works for Sting, just make it about Sting. Yeah. Ring of Honor Supercard has announced a show for April 5th at Philadelphia's Leocoras Center. I don't know if I pronounced that right. I probably didn't, and correct me if I'm wrong there. Last year they drew 4,500. Nothing on poster about a pay-per-view. We are only about 6 weeks out from the show, so wouldn't shock me if they're done with pay-per-view, which I think would be an interesting decision to completely revert back to Honor Club if that ends up being the case. But going to be interesting to see what ends up happening here, because it is a traditional show that is run on WrestleMania weekend. Tony Khan has talked about how he doesn't want to run on WrestleMania weekend, but this is Ring of Honor. It's always ran WrestleMania weekend for a long time. So theoretically, should be a great show. I have no idea what will be on it, but should be good.
Yeah. I do think that, they're obviously trying to juice Honor Club. If they were happy with how they were going, they would not have done this, you know. So they obviously want more people to subscribe to Honor Club. And, you know, I just want to point out, like, I think this is only going to work so much because of the way that Ring of Honor works currently, where there's, you know, like a couple storylines going on at any time. But, you know, it's very much feels like a red and black edition of AEW Dark, in my opinion. And, you know, just going through the last episode that aired last week, you know, and I'm not saying that like a match has to be long to be good, but I do think it's indicative that if you go through this card, which was 9 matches, the longest of them was under 11 minutes. And, you know, you can have a good 11-minute match. That's not my point. My point is that half the cards or half the matches on the card were 6 minutes or less. And several of them were, you know, like Brian Keith got a squash against Slice Boogie in under 2 minutes. And the Outrunners got a squash win, and so on and so forth. I just don't think you're really doing much when 50% or more of the matches on the card are squashes. And, you know, like, I don't think you're going to get many eyeballs with that. But that's kind of been the problem with Ring of Honor since it started under Khan. So,
yeah. All right. More news here. And this one's a bad one. El Hijo del Vikingo injured his knee on February 17th. I believe it was a lucha show down in Mexico. I think, was it Mas Lucha? That part isn't necessarily important, but it's a meniscus injury. And I know plenty about meniscus injuries. So there are two types of injuries. There is a bucket handle tear where it just splits in half. And there's multiple different types of minor tears, which can be scraped. Now, what that means is they basically take the damaged tissue and they scrape it off of the meniscus. Or you can do a full repair, which is stitched up. The scrape is worse off for your long-term health, but you can return significantly quicker with the scrape than you can with the full repair. In the NFL, a scrape, you're out 4 to 6 weeks. A full repair, you're out 3 months. So it would be best, especially considering Vikingo's style, for him to get the full repair. We'll see what he ends up doing, but he might not be in a position where he can afford to be out for 3 months. So all the best wishes to him in a speedy recovery, but it's unfortunate. Vikingo rules, man.
Yeah. It is noteworthy that they, you know, AAA has not even mentioned this on their social media yet, at least as of earlier this week.
Are you surprised?
No, I'm
it's
not.
It's AAA.
No, I just like an opportunity to bury AAA. You know, please allow me this small gift. But yeah, also there was not a stretcher at the show, so another wrestler had to carry Vikingo to the back, which not great, but we'll keep an eye on it. Hopefully it's more on the minor side, but he's been getting banged up a lot over the past year or two and, you know, working a lot and putting his body through a lot. He has a very aggressive performer, you know, that's going to take a toll on him, I think.
Yeah. Trent Barretta sent home from AEW TV this week due to his health. They made a point of it on TV that Barretta was not medically cleared to compete. So Orange Cassidy's like, all right, I'll wrestle. And he ended up taking the match against Mike Bennett. Queen Aminata is All Elite. Just like Brian Keith and just like many before her, we thought this was coming. We felt it coming. Aminata's got something.
Yeah,
still a little green as far as a wrestler, but the presence, the charisma, the understanding of situations, she's really good already. And do we know how old she is? Is she like 25? I think she's younger.
She is quite young. Let me see if it's on Cage Match. It is not. But she debuted in 2017.
She could have debuted at 17. I mean, Billy Starks debuted at what, 14 or 15? And now she's 19. Like, regardless, she's a talent that is going to be worth really investing and developing in. And with this women's division becoming stronger and stronger, you're going to feel less pressure to really focus a lot of television time on her and put her in positions she may not be ready for. And you can really continue to develop that talent. And I think that's really, really appealing.
Yep.
All right. While you continue to look up Queen Aminata's age,
it's a mystery. I can't find it anywhere.
No. Well, she's a mystery. Fightful is reporting that Kyle Fletcher is unable to work in the U.S. due to visa issues. Now, Fletcher is Australian, so visa issues happen sometimes with those who have residency outside of the United States. It happened with Kenny Omega, I think last year, or maybe it was 2 years ago, where he couldn't work a show because there were some visa issues, but they got it cleared up pretty quickly. So hopefully that gets cleared up relatively soon. The Rock's production company, this is interesting, is working on developing a biopic on Ric Flair. This could get bad. And bad in the sense of, like, the 30 for 30 on Ric Flair was fun. It was entertaining. It gave you a glimpse into his personal life and the stuff he dealt with on the road and the stuff he did on the road. But look, it was obviously from a very biased perspective, and it wasn't like a Dark Side of the Ring where they try to really focus on what the truth is. So this could get bad, and it could end up being like a Ric Flair propaganda piece. And I'll be honest, I'm not looking forward to it.
Yeah, they're going to have a hard time trying to paper over some of his issues. AEW is getting some backlash for using him with his history, and I think that's just going to be amplified. You know, it's a much bigger deal to try to do a feature film on him versus, you know, trying to use him as kind of a secondary character in a storyline as a favor to Sting, you know.
Yeah, I get it with the Ric Flair thing, but come on. It's Ric Flair and Sting. That's fine. It's like, if it was anybody else, if it was Hulk Hogan, no. It's Ric Flair. I'm fine with it. It, like, Ric Flair made Sting.
We'll talk about it a little bit more when we get to the show. I think it kind of dovetails.
You have thoughts, I can tell. You have thoughts.
Some opinions. Speaking of Sting.
Kevin Nash said WWE won't let him attend Sting's final match. Today I learned Kevin Nash was still on a veterans contract.
Yeah, apparently, which is an odd contract and one I should look into further. It's kind of weird to me. I don't know how much of this I truly believe versus it being like not actual contractual issue, but more of a I don't want to get heat or something, or I've been asked to not go, but I'm citing the contract as an excuse. I don't know. It's kind of odd.
Yeah. Well, Fred, that's it for news.
Yeah.
Are you excited to talk about this show?
Yeah, let's talk about Dynamite.
The show was good.
Yeah, I thought it was a very solid show. I thought it was more segment or promo or angle heavy, whatever term you like to use, versus match quality. But there was one that I considered 5 stars on briefly before deciding not to. So,
yeah. Let me say this. There's been a lot of criticism over the years about AEW not building up their pay-per-views. This pay-per-view has a phenomenal build.
Yes, I agree.
Everything has a purpose. Everything has backstory. Everything has momentum going into the pay-per-view. They had this pay-per-view nearly fully booked last week. And they'll probably add, like, hey, these guys just don't have a match. Let's throw them on there and just give them 12 minutes and let them go kick ass. That'd be fun. But you had one match made this week, which was Christian versus Daniel Garcia for the TNT title because of the concerto to Adam Copeland. He's going to be out for X amount of time. I'd guess a few weeks. Give him a mini vacation. Give Garcia the spotlight. But the Sting Young Bucks match, the three-way for the world title, like you have so, like Deonna Purrazzo, Tony Storm. So many of these matches have already been made for quite a while.
Weeks now, yeah.
Yeah. And I think it's great. This pay-per-view has been built incredibly well. Next week is the heat check because the pay-per-view is on Sunday, March 3rd. If you're outside of the United States, voiceofwrestling.com/fight to order. Fred, this is exciting.
Yeah.
And I thought this show, like you kind of mentioned, it was very angle heavy. Did a great job of continuing that build.
Yeah, I thought that a lot of good angles on the show that I thought really contributed to some storylines. And I thought it heated up some. One in particular that we'll talk about when we get to it. Match quality, outside of the opener, I love the opener. But outside of that, I thought the matches were, you know, very, you know, like the main event was pretty good and the rest was solid except for, you know, the Madison Rain match, which we'll also get to. But yeah, I thought I liked the show. I liked the show quite a bit.
Yeah, let's talk about the opening match. Blackpool Combat Club's John Moxley and Claudio Castagnoli and FTR go to a 20-minute draw with a pull apart, and then after commercial break, they almost brawled backstage. Fred, this is great. This was,
I love this match.
The exchange early on between John Moxley and Cash Wheeler, where they were just throwing forearms at each other. Cash had a couple forearms that popped me. They were just loud, and oh, it was great.
Yeah, I thought this match ruled. I thought this was excellent. The build of the time limit draw was perfect, I thought. They just worked really hard with each other. I like great effort from all four guys, as you would expect. And I ended up giving this 4.75 stars. Like, I nearly dropped a 5 on it. I just thought it was tremendously intense and really well worked and exciting and about as good as a tag match as you can reasonably expect to appear on TV.
Yeah, exactly. This was awesome. I gave it 4.5+. You can't ask for more from an opening match on a show. You can't ask more from a television match. We've gotten more. AEW's delivered more. But this was great, and it really set things up moving forward. And to me, I was very appreciative of that. They've done a really good job of making this feud feel interesting. It almost felt like this feud was just kind of thrown together, especially with the CMLL guys kind of cycling in. And obviously, they're going to do stuff at Arena Mexico, which you're going to see Bryan Danielson and Blue Panther in the ring together.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's going to be cool as hell.
Yeah, that'll be a really interesting match. Apparently, the Mexican fans are kind of not sure why Blue Panther is in that match because he has definitely been relegated to lower in the card. You know, like this has just been a dream match for Bryan Danielson for years now. So it's just interesting just to see that.
Yeah, let me. I need to pull up the results because I just watched the show this morning. But as you can tell, my eyes are a little droopy because I'm tired. This was where we got the Orange Cassidy interview in the back saying, "Oh, I'm gonna wrestle if I'm cleared," and he's cleared. So there we go. And then right after that, we got Alex Marvez interviewing FTR, and that's when we get the second pull apart. Then Orange Cassidy does face Mike Bennett. Mm-hmm. What did you think of this match, Fred?
Fine. I thought it was pretty good. I went 3.25 on it. There's a bunch of high impact moves that they did in a pretty short period of time. I thought that I had good intensity. It just was short of me like thinking it was really a memorable match of, you know, even like a, hey, if you're AEW diehard, make sure you check this out kind of level. But yeah, it was good. And I didn't, you know, I had no issue watching it.
Yeah. I thought this was a good 3.75 star match. I really thought this was fun. But then this was weird. Renee Paquette was backstage to interview Angela Parker about his big date out tonight with Ruby Soho. What are we doing?
That's been a storyline they've been doing for a while now. I think mainly on Rampage. But you know, I thought it was a little smooth way to try get that worked in real quick on a show that was not about them very much, and set something up for Rampage, and then immediately transition to the bigger Ric Flair angle. Kind of set that up. No mention of Jake Hager in his home state, Tyler.
Oh yeah,
kind of a weird save, but once they explained everything, it made like super sense. I thought, but well, at first it was like, why the hell is Hager coming out?
Hager's in great shape.
He looks good. He does. I'm not like asking for like a bigger Hager push, but like, you know, he's a. I think he'll always be, or at least right now, for the short term future, will be a reasonable, like, I'm the mid card tough guy that beating means a little more than most other mid carders.
I'll be honest, I think we should get a bigger Hager push in this sense. The role he had with the Jericho Appreciation Society, I thought was perfect. And I think he should be involved in another push like that, where he's a guy, he's the muscle, and hey, you want to face me in X match, you got to beat Hager first. Like, that's a perfect role for him. And I would honestly like to see him do that just a little bit more.
Yeah, I think he does well as a heavy in a stable.
Yeah, heavy in a stable. That's a perfect role. So right after the Angelo Parker interview with Ruby, then we get a shot of somebody coming out of a Suburban. At first, I thought it was the Young Bucks because of the shoes. Nope. Nature Boy Ric Flair. Renee Paquette interviewed him about Sting's upcoming retirement matches, and he said this: I'm disappointed. When I signed up for this, I thought I'd be a bigger part of the picture. I'm not upset with Sting. I'm just upset that I'm not more involved. Feel like I should be right in the middle of things, and I haven't been. So between you and me, I'm just going to explore some options. I'm not trying to put you in the middle, telling Renee that. I'm just telling you the truth. And then he walks and starts talking to the Young Bucks. So I have to ask you this question, Fred. Is Sting going to be turned on by Ric Flair again?
We're not doing phrasing here. Yeah, I think this will be a... This is interesting. I don't know if it'll be good for Sting to be turned on by Ric Flair, but I do think it'd be very funny if Flair turns his back on Sting during an angle. Just because that's what happened for years and years, and that was like the defining thing of Sting's career, is that he got stabbed in the back over and over by Ric Flair. I do think an inversion here where Ric Flair positions himself like an ally of the Young Bucks only to stab them in the backs, that could work too. That would be a kind of... And then you get Flair celebrating with Sting after it's all over. But Flair may just want to, you know, sell for Sting and make him look good. So that's the other way they could go. I don't know. It's kind of interesting. I don't know how much Ric Flair I want on my TV in 2024, you know, to be honest. But I thought this was at least interesting. So
if we're going to have Ric Flair on our TVs in the year 2024, I'm fine with being involved with Sting.
Yeah.
Because that makes sense. That's yes. Got a near 40 year history. I'm okay with that. Anything else? Yeah, I'm with you. I leave Ric Flair in the past, but for right now, I think his inclusion is good.
Yeah, and I think we've seen, like, over the years that the Flair is not a guy that can really act as a manager and get someone over. He's not able to do that reliably. So, you know, then becomes a, well, what do you do with him, you know? And I think once you get outside the Sting storyline, that it's going to be tough to find a spot for Ric Flair on your roster.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let's talk about Daniel Garcia. This was the first of three tremendous, tremendous promo segments. And Tony said after what happened to Copeland last week, he's on the shelf and unable to compete. So Daniel Garcia gets a shot at the TNT title against Christian Cage. Fans chant, you deserve it. And he just delivers a tremendous promo, talking about those 3 seconds in the Continental Classic and how when he was starting to lose confidence, they really changed things for him. And he just baby faces himself big time. And then Christian Cage comes out. And this was just phenomenal. Like, I'm going to read it verbatim. "We both know why the way you are, don't we, Daniel? I know something that these people don't know. That you had a pretty dark childhood, didn't you, Daniel? You didn't have so many happy memories, did you? Do you know a Jackie Garcia that lives in Buffalo, New York? And can you confirm to me that Jackie was married to David Garcia? And I understand that David Garcia is your father. And your father is dead." Jeez, does anybody in All Elite Wrestling have a father that's alive? It's amazing he can keep doing this.
Yeah. A lot of orphans. AEW, the home for wayward children. I thought Daniel Garcia cut a great babyface promo, arguably the best of his career to date. Christian, of course, is just excellent in this role and excellent at these heel promos. One thing I am actually slightly worried about, I think maybe at some point you do turn Daddy Magic or just separate them once he's no longer really beneficial to Daniel Garcia. I think it's too soon to do that. I don't think he's... I think there's more he can do for Daniel Garcia to help him out. It's a rare case of a manager benefiting a babyface. You don't see a whole lot of that in wrestling. I just hope that this is not a case where he gets frustrated after, like, he loses to Christian and turns on Daniel Garcia. I think that would be the wrong time.
Yeah. I'm going to be intrigued to see what happens here. I think you could make a real argument that Garcia should win this, but it also doesn't make sense with the longer story that they're telling with Adam Copeland.
They could do a short reign if Copeland's going to be gone for a couple months. You know, they could do that. So,
yeah, just do a quick swap.
And then Christian gets it back.
Yeah, the TNT title has done a lot of open challenge stuff, so you could do it.
Yeah, you got options.
Yeah, and then make Christian the three-time TNT champion, the only three-time TNT champion.
Yes.
Right after this, we
had... Is that right? Was Cody not a three-time or Darby?
I think Cody was a two-time. Because I think maybe Cody was three-time. Because he did drop it to... He dropped it to Brody Lee.
Mm-hmm.
And then got it back from Brody Lee.
Mm-hmm.
He dropped it to Darby.
And then he got it back from Sammy Guevara. So that's a three-timer.
Okay, so...
Sammy Guevara is a three-timer. And Wardlow, somehow, shockingly, is a three-time champion.
Well, fuck me. I'm wrong. Let's move on before I have to hit the bricks for good. Time of Tony Storm versus Sydney Winnell. And Timeless Tony kind of beats the crap out of her, and then
it's just a squash, you know.
Yeah, I think it's important that they established that she could win with submission here.
They did.
Because first she had the ankle lock, and then she hit the Venus de Milo and won via submission. And then right after the match, she's going to the back, and Deonna Purrazzo's music hits, and then they cross paths on the apron. I thought the transition was great. And then Deonna Purrazzo versus Madison Rayne. And Madison Rayne tried to kill herself.
Gotcha.
It looked like her neck snapped in half. To my knowledge, I think she's okay. But yeah, it looked real bad.
She landed right on her doom. It was probably supposed to be like a snap exploder, which Purrazzo does pretty regularly. According to our man in the field, Garrett Kidney.
Host of You've Got to Be Kidding Me here on this podcast network. TNA yes. Rewatch.
I think that was Garrett. I apologize if I messed that up. I thought it was supposed to be like just a flatliner. And, buddy, that was... But she was supposed to flip, but she did flip all the way. And I just hope she's okay. I'm shocked that they... I mean, granted, they went right to an ankle lock, so it's not like they really moved her much or anything. I'm shocked that they didn't just stop the match there to some extent. You know, she probably signaled she was okay and, you know, all right. But that was a scary-ass bump. It was kind of reminiscent of Willie Mack doing that standing moonsault a few weeks ago and landing on his head. Flips are hard, I guess. Hopefully she's okay. I will say that I thought before this that she was not good. There was, you know, exactly, especially right before the bump, she was doing some, you know, like a counter sequence with Diana, and to my eyes, you know, I'm not like an expert, you know, at, like, what's really going on in the ring. You know, I couldn't train anyone or anything like that. But it really did look like that Rain was moving in slow motion on those sequences. And I thought that it was a rough performance, I thought, from her. But
Madison Rain, like, there's a line from School of Rock. Mm-hmm. Those who can't do, teach. And those who can't teach, teach gym. And I think Madison Rain may want to get out of the ring and just focus on teaching. Because yeah. Just because you can't do anymore doesn't mean you can't teach. I could teach how to do a round off back handspring. I can't do a cartwheel.
Yeah.
I can coach you through it. Like, fun fact, Fred, I don't know if I told you this. I did some gymnastics coaching.
Oh, really?
When I was younger. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. They needed somebody just to hang out with the kids and help out the actual coach. And then I just kind of learned things. And then I had my own class on Saturday mornings.
Look at you.
I know.
You and Brian Alvarez.
Yeah.
I will say this is an early contender for worst match of the year for me. I went a half star on it, and that may have been generous.
Look, they gave effort, so real effort. I don't really go less than 2 stars. It wasn't good, but they tried really hard, so I'm not going to go lower than that. Two stars isn't good.
Yeah, for me that's average. For you, that's below average. I will say, like, I'm not knocking their effort or anything. And, you know, I'm sure Madison Rain is a lovely person. And, you know, I ripped on her when she got kind of her push when she first came in. And I'm ripping on her here. I'm not trying to, like, you know, knock her as a person or anything. But I just don't think that she's a great in-ring performer, at least in 2024. I can't say that I watched a lot of her earlier TNA stuff. But
she was, you know, she was fine in the knockouts division back in the day.
I think it's just kind of a case of, like, you know, the game has evolved, and I don't know that she can really keep up in the ring. That doesn't mean she can't be a good coach, though, but I just kind of don't think she should really be on Dynamite. You know?
Those who can do, teach, and I think that's where we're at with Madison Rain. Yeah. It's just time. But I'm guessing, based on the role she was hired for, which was backstage, I will say I like that they kind of did this match because there is history with Diana and Rain. I think that is an interesting element to just kind of utilize with this whole storyline, but it's time to keep Madison Rain out of the ring. That's just the way it is. You're going to have to walk us through this because I watched Dynamite yesterday while I was recording another podcast. So I had to watch most of it on mute because
sure.
I work like an absolute sicko. Walk us through. Yeah, it's really a problem. Walk us through this Sting promo, which, according to everybody else, was fantastic.
Yeah, I thought this was really good. And do you want me to do the Wardlow one too? After I forget if you got to that one.
Yeah, because I didn't watch it. I watched it. I didn't listen to it. By the delivery, it looked fantastic. Wardlow was really into it. He was getting impassioned. And the crowd seemed to be reacting, but I was on mute, so I didn't hear any of the words.
All right, so Darby and Sting, this was a pre-tape promo where, you know, started with Darby showing off a photo of Sting with his kids when Sting was back in WCW with the Wolfpack face paint. And Darby talks a little bit and, you know, says, you know, a lot happens in life, basically, but in the end, all that matters is family. And then Sting said, no one's ever messed with my flesh and blood until you, Bucks. And he got very emotional. He brought up how his father had passed away a week ago, and how that makes Sting think about his own mortality. And, you know, he used to think he was so invincible, but he does say that everything he has in him, he's bringing to Revolution. And and he tells the Bucks that they have a fight on their hands, which is going to be the fight of their life. This was really well delivered. You know, Darby ain't a great promo. I thought he did well here. I thought he did okay last week. So, you know, like, Darby, you know, is a guy that's got everything but the promo. He's, like, you know, kind of comparable to Mercedes Moné, you know, in that sense. Sting, you know, it's funny because when I was growing up, I watched him in the 90s because I am old now. But, you know, Sting was definitely considered not a prime talker, to the point that they did a whole ass year-long storyline where Sting did not talk. You know, he just hung out in the rafters for a whole year. Before that, he cut very generic babyface promos as Surfer Sting. And then, you know, as he went on in his career, he became a better and better promo. And I thought this was a nice example of how Sting is a good promo. I thought this was a really well thought out segment. I think that was really important, but I thought Sting in particular did a great job delivering his stuff. And this is one of the highlights in the show. Definitely worth seeking out. Tyler.
I will be seeking it out.
I know. I'm just kidding. Next up is the Wardlow segment. So I'll go through that too. I thought this was even better than the Sting promo, and I like that Sting promo a lot. I thought this was arguably, and yeah, I'm kind of vacillating on this versus the Daniel Garcia Christian Cage segment, but I thought this may have been the best segment of the show outside of the opening match. And I'm saying this as a guy that has openly opined about maybe they should just give up on Wardlow. I just don't know if it's going to work out. Wardlow, nothing but praise for him. He delivered a hell of a promo here, and if this is what he can do, he needs to be doing it every week, because you get a guy like this. I don't know if he could be like a tippy top guy, but this is a promo from a star. I thought this was really good, and I'd like to see more of this from him. I think there's a bigger conversation about, you know, the Undisputed Kingdom and where they fit into AEW right now, because I feel like for weeks they've just been kind of mid-card geeks, in large part because Adam Cole can't do anything, and Wardlow has just been doing the same squash stuff he's been doing for years now. But I think this could very easily, if they don't screw it up again with Wardlow, which, you know, they kind of like to do, and Wardlow isn't exactly innocent in that, you know, sometimes his performances are lackluster as far as being like a well-rounded star. But I thought this was great. So he comes out, tells Tony Schiavone to get the hell out of the ring, basically, before he knocks him down again. And so he starts kind of this promo about how, you know, let's look at the last few champions. You've got the best in the world. I beat his ass. You've got some guy who thinks he's better than you, and you know it. I beat his ass. And I've got a wrestling god, and I beat his ass too. And I beat these guys like no one else ever did. He said he was the one true homegrown AEW original that should have been the champ a long time ago, but somehow I never received that opportunity. People backstage need to be fired and thrown in jail for that. Pro incarceration Wardlow here. And then he also throws in a little jab at Samoa Joe when he's talking about him. He said, "Shiny titles and nice suits look a hell of a lot better on me," which was a great line. He then says that he sounds like I'm the best in the world, better than you, and you know it, and that I'm the most dangerous man in the room. I'm the uncrowned king of AEW, and it's time I start eating like one, because I've been starving and I'm done being fed scraps. Look at me, I'm everything world champion is supposed to be. No one back there is bigger, stronger, or faster than me, and this is no longer wrestling, this is war. I thought this, he knocked it out of the park. This is great work from him, much better than I would have ever guessed in a million years. If you told me Wardlow was just going to cut a 5-minute promo on Dynamite, I would not have expected it to be this good. If we get more of this, I think he's definitely a guy you can push. And then afterwards, they mentioned that he is going to be in a match on Revolution called Meat Madness. So I guess they're going to get all the beefy guys out there and just going to be the Big E Invitational. Because they in a later segment teased that Will Hobbs was going to be in that match as well. But yeah, I love the segment. Another one definitely worth your time.
Did you really just say Meat Madness?
Meat Madness. That is what they said on the broadcast multiple times. The meat.
Be
you
still
know,
my heart.
Yeah, I do think it's a little maybe too much, right? Because I thought that the meat chants were kind of funny back when they did it during the Miro and whoever, I forget who he was facing now on pay-per-view last year, but I love that match. But I don't know that I love the name, but I will say that the match will be probably really damn good. So,
Meat Madness. I'm in. I'm all in. That sounds awesome.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited for that.
The Bang Bang Scissor Gang were backstage. Look, I think they're just elongating this.
This was not Wardlow, and this was not Daniel Garcia, and this was not Sting.
No. Excalibur announced with a small video package that Will Ospreay will be on Dynamite next Wednesday night, and he will also be at All In, which was pretty much known to everybody who has common sense. But smart for them to announce it because, hey, you know what? Maybe knowing for sure he's going to be there is going to sell like maybe 1,000 tickets or something. So
that should help.
Pay attention to WrestleTix over the next few days.
That'll be interesting. Yep. Real quick, I will say that they're definitely teasing the breakup of the Bang Bang Scissor Gang already. I mean, I don't expect it in the next week or two, but I think that they're starting to show that these guys can't exist. And frankly, I feel like it's another storyline that the Acclaimed in particular are just spinning their wheels in, which has felt like the past 2 or 3 years now at this point, which I know hasn't been that long, but it feels like it's been that long. So this has not been the breath of fresh air I think any of these guys really needed.
All right. And then Renee Paquette was backstage with the Don Callis family. Renee asked Don how Will Ospreay versus Konosuke Takeshita will benefit the Callis family. He says, because win or lose, the two best road pro wrestlers will still be a part of the Don Callis family. He said he's on his way to the UK in a private jet to pick up Ospreay. Callis said the powerhouse Hobbs is going to do damage in Meat Madness at Revolution. And he said that the Don Callis family and Sammy Guevara have a score to settle at Rampage. So I don't know if that match was made official or what the match is, but something to watch on Friday night.
Mm-hmm.
And the main event, Samoa Joe scores the win for Samoa Joe, the Machine, Brian Cage, and Swerve Strickland over Hook, Hangman Page, and Rob Van Dam by choking out Rob Van Dam with Coquina Clutch. I'm going to be honest, Fred. This sucked.
Really? I thought this was fun.
It felt really disjointed. It felt like these guys had no chemistry together whatsoever. It felt like the match got put together 5 minutes beforehand, and everybody was just thinking. And in my world of football, if you think, you lose. You can't think on the football field. You have to have that knowledge already built in, and you have to be able to react quickly. Recognize and react. And it felt like these guys were just doing a lot of thinking in the ring and not being able to do enough reacting. To me, it just felt disjointed. RVD had troubles getting onto the top rope.
Yeah, just little, like a slip once or twice. I mean, that wasn't bad.
Here's the thing. It was all little things. Nothing was egregious. It was all little stuff. And little stuff here, little stuff there. And then it compiled, and it was just a ton of little stuff. And that's why, to me,
Gentlemen's three.
The effort was good. It just didn't work.
We need to talk about your star scale if you're saying this match sucked and then giving it a three.
No, I said gentleman's three. The effort was good. I can't knock it that much. It just, everything was just off.
Look, Tommy Wiseau tried hard in The Room. Doesn't mean it's a 2 or 3 star movie, man.
Hey, The Room is a classic.
Not in a good way. I thought that Rob Van Dam actually acquitted himself decently here. Like, you're not going to get a great Rob Van Dam performance in 2024, really, because he's old, you know, unfortunately. I can still say that. I got a few years left of saying Rob Van Dam is old, thank God. At some point, maybe I'll make it to his age, and then I'll just be old, too. But listen, this guy, he had a nice performance, I thought. Looked pretty decent. He slipped on the ropes when he tried to hop up there once or twice, but he's 53 years old. I'm not going to rip on him for that. What I did think was a little disappointing was Hook's performance in this match. I thought he looked off. I actually thought he came off quite well back in the Samoa Joe singles match a few weeks ago, that main event of that Dynamite, where I thought that he looked very good. Here, I thought he looked awkward. I thought his offense looked off, just kind of off kilter. I thought that his, I think his selling to the point that it may have, kind of made Joe like delay a spot or two, which isn't bad inherently, but the offense is really what I'm concerned about here. And I thought that at some points Hook did not look as good as he has previously and looked rough. Guy's young, doesn't have a lot of experience in the ring. I can't rip on that too much, but I do think it's something that concerned me in this match. Now, I will say that in general, I liked this match. I thought it was fun. I didn't think it was like a classic by any stretch. It's not in the same arena as that opener, let's be clear. But I thought that the work of Paige, Swerve, and Joe, in particular, was very good. I thought they those three stepped up. Brian Cage had himself a solid night. He gets knocked for, doing big spots and not maybe the connective tissue isn't so great in between. But frankly, when you're in a six-man tag, you can get away with just doing big spots. I thought Swerve looked good. I thought Paige did a great job as a heel. Plus, if that is a worked ankle injury, then he did a hell of a sell job, a high-level one. And Samoa Joe is just perfect as Samoa Joe. So I thought, this was more good than not. And I went 3.5 on it as a result.
So hold on.
Yeah.
You're giving me crap because you go 3.5 and I go gentleman's 3.
No, I'm giving you crap because you said this match sucked and then you gave it 3 stars. That's what I'm giving you crap over.
Do you know what a gentleman's 3 is?
I understand that it's like, it wasn't really that good, but the effort was there. I'm just saying that if you thought the match sucked, your star rating should reflect that it sucked. It should be a below average star rating for you.
The effort was good. It was just completely disjointed and there was no chemistry.
Madison Rayne tried real hard and she dropped herself on her head.
And I gave that 2 stars, but I thought that it was a lot messier than that, which is why I gave it that low of a rating.
I just got a text from... Natalie Merchant, and she said, "You're kind and generous."
I am. I really am.
Look, I have no idea who that joke's for.
Yeah. I'm a very optimistic guy. Like,
that's good. I just think you got to be a realist about your ratings a little bit. I'm saying this as a guy that rates high. So, I don't have much of a ledge to stand on here. I think it's fun to talk about, the theory behind star ratings a little bit, though.
My theory is that you suck, Fred.
Well, that's not a theory. That's law. We've done enough testing to prove that scientifically.
That's probably true.
Did you catch Rampage this week? Because I did not.
No, I didn't.
I think I was at the movies instead.
I was trying to catch it live, but then the wife came home, and the wife hates wrestling. So I didn't, but I heard it was good.
Yeah, I didn't get to catch it either. This is a very busy month for me professionally, so I'm just kind of going to have to catch up on Rampage here at some point. But let me pull that up on the old Cage match, and then it got a 7.03, which for a Rampage that's a good rating. And a Jeff Hardy match got over a 7 with Sammy Guevara, which is shocking. Of course, that was the one where everyone freaked out because they thought Guevara cussed Jeff Hardy, but they didn't.
I did at least see the end of that match. Look, sometimes when you do a shooting star press, you cockeye that rotation.
It's a dangerous move.
Yeah, because of how you have to torque your body. I remember Billy Kidman.
We talked about this last week, I think. Yeah. But yeah, Kidman getting it banned for years.
It's fine.
I remember the story was that Paul Lennon was like, "But I do it better than Kidman." More accurate. And they were like, "It's banned." So...
just do
kind of a funny story. People fairly like the Anna Jay Queen Aminata match that got a 6.34, for like a Rampage women's match where you probably only got like 10 minutes, that's pretty good.
Yeah. All right. I think that's our show, Fred.
Yeah, I think that's it.
Before we start fighting more about star ratings.
Yeah, I we can do that more if you want. I mean, I'm going to get lunch at some point, but, I think it's fun to discuss. I do think I got opinions. They're dumb, but they're opinions. So
the one tough part about star ratings is it's vibes-based.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
And it's incredibly subjective. And, when you look at, UFC... and you have 3 judges, and you have so many different styles and ways to win and compete in a UFC octagon, it's difficult to have anything concrete as far as it has to look like this.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the same holds true with star ratings, because you have preferences and stuff. And if it's a 5-star match, there's just a feeling.
Yeah.
There's just, I know that this is a 5-star match because of X, Y, and Z. And it's a vibe. It's not just the work. It's how you feel, how everything just worked for the crowd. It's amazing how much it's vibes-based and how much it's opinions-based. Plus, when you think about it, my opinions on wrestling are different from your opinions, mm-hmm. or different from people who love Joshi, different from people who love Shoot Style, different from people who love Puro Rezu, different from people who love WWE, different from people who love, like, just meat slapping meat. Like, it's so subjective, which is why I love stuff like the Voice of Wrestling Match of the Year poll, because it takes opinions from all of those people and puts them into one pile. Be like, hey, people from all across the world. Yeah, I keep getting gunk in my throat. And
I feel you on that.
And all different backgrounds and all different likes of professional wrestling come together and vote on the best matches. And I think that's what makes it cool. But there really is no perfect method. It's being genuine, being real,
being consistent. And
so, consistent with what your ratings are. I've given matches 5 stars that not 5 stars, but like 4.5, 4.75 that I didn't really like. But I just like, hey, that work was really, really good, and I can't knock it. I have to give it a really high rating because the work was great.
Yeah, there's someone in the Voices of Wrestling Discord, I'm forgetting their name right now, but they'll like say that they really like the match, and they'd give it 3.75 stars because that's how their scale works. And, I think that as long as you're consistent, that's fine. I think that the funniest people are the ones who get mad at Dave's ratings for matches, saying that they're subjective. And it's like, yes, that is how star ratings work for anything. It's not like he's got a grading rubric and, you know, it's like dropkick plus 1 point, you know?
Yeah. It's subjective. And subjectively, give us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts or whatever podcast aggregator you choose to use. It would make us very happy. And Fred may stop yelling at me about my star ratings if you give us a 5-star review. So
even that isn't strong enough, but you know.
No. Hey, we would appreciate it. So thank you guys very much for listening to the latest episode of The Good, the Bad, and the Hungy. Next week, we will be back with the Heat Check, talking about Revolution and previewing what could be one of the best shows AEW has ever done, at least on paper. From Fred, I'm Tyler. Have a wonderful day. We'll see you next week.
Take care, everyone.
Cheering at pro wrestling shows in Japan is back, and 2023 is already shaping up to be a big year in the history of pro res. That's why you should listen to the Emerald Flow Show. From the Royal Road to the Green Mat, Paul and Gerard take you into the world of All Japan Pro Wrestling and Pro Wrestling NOAH. Not only do we analyze events, but we examine business, who is getting over, what angles are working or not. Occasionally, we take a look at other Japanese promotions like DDT and Zero One. So if you're looking for more coverage of the world of Japanese wrestling, check out the Emerald Flow Show on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network, available on all of your favorite podcast apps.